So a funny thing that happened at Leadville, the start of the race, I'm standing in line with, you know, all these amazing people. There's like 600, 700 runners. It was awesome. So 4 minutes before the shotgun blast that starts the race, I am taking a picture, and I realize as I put my phone back in that I forgot to pack my nutrition for the first 12 and a half miles. And I'm not freaking out, but I'm like, oh crap, this isn't good. And so I call my wife, she puts my coach on, and he sprints to his car, him and Jake Bradley, another guy out there crewing for me, who's awesome. They sprint to the car and grab their nutrition that they had, because they've been hiking out there and stuff. And he shoves it in my hand and says, this is what you got for the first 12 miles, go. And so there's actually somebody took a one of my favorite photos of Leadville, or of the race. I'm running down 6th Street. Everybody is ahead of me. I'm like 2.5 minutes behind everybody. And there's a picture of me in the back with everybody in front of me. So I'm the last person besides the Legacy Foundation runner. I'm the last person out of the chute.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Jonathan Prosser. Jonathan just finished running the Leadville 100, and his first attempt, his previous attempt at running a race in the mountains, running a 100-mile trail race in the mountains, didn't quite go as he had planned. Living in Kansas at an elevation of around 1,000 feet makes it hard to breathe when you're trying to run at an altitude over 10,000 feet, when you start out at 10,000 feet and go up. So he adjusted his strategy for Leadville, he got a coach, and he planned to get to the mountains several days before his race so his body could adapt and get used to the altitude. His coach also gave him a solid strategy for his race, and Jonathan followed that strategy perfectly. For anybody who's listening to this and thinks, if you think you might want to run 100 miles anywhere, whether it's in the mountains or in the flatlands, pay attention. Jonathan's story will give you great advice to follow. So here it is. Let's get into my conversation with Jonathan Prosser. But that's cool. So how's recovery going for you?
It's actually been really good. I've only had two runs, but they've both felt really good. My only problem I had was my knee. My right knee was the only persistent injury. But yeah, I think it's been going really well.
Yeah. Well, cool. You lived in Topeka. Did you get started running when you were younger, or was it something that you came to after you got?
No, that's actually funny. I really actually hated running.
You know, I hear
I'm one of those guys that is like, I used to play basketball and I only ran to condition for basketball.
Okay.
And then just playing after high school, playing basketball, like in pickup or in city league, it just wasn't the same. There was so much bickering and bad refereeing. I was just like, I'm tired of this. And I just started, Washburn University. I used to live over by there, and I would start just running the 2-mile sidewalk loop around Washburn.
Oh, uh-huh, yeah.
And then, you know, I can measure myself off of like, I'm going to try to get faster this time and then this time. And that's where it started. It was just running that 2-mile loop.
Yeah. So just to stay in shape?
It was to stay in shape. And then it was like, I had found fell in love with it in a way that I had never experienced with any fitness. I used to do cycling, and that was my first, like, it was basketball and cycling. And then when I started running, that was like, no, running's, you get a way better return on return on your investment.
Then you're different. I know. I was cycling for a lot of years as well. And well, and I had the recumbent cycle. So I was, you know, where you just kind of laying down and sitting in a lawn chair I think my heart may have done okay, but as far as any kind of physical conditioning, it was pretty pathetic.
Yeah. I find it kind of for me, you know, I'd take it for one, but just like being fit and losing weight was easier for me on a bike.
Really?
Than running. Like I initially, when I started running, I lost weight, but then it like plateaued, and then unless I did like more speed work, I never really saw the, I don't know. I think overall I just felt better doing, you know, weightlifting and cycling, but I love running
and yeah.
I'm in, you know, I'm capable, so I'm in shape.
Yeah. So what changed? I mean, you were, was it that you didn't have the coach telling you how to run that made it more fun?
No, it was the challenge, I think, to just challenge myself. It was something that was outside of my comfort. And, cause I didn't have a coach until, this year.
No, I mean the coach. You said you hated running in basketball when you were in basketball. So was the coach. I'm sorry. I knew where I was going, but I didn't tell you. I'm sorry. That's all right. No, I mean you said you hated to run as in basketball. I said so. I mean, what made the change? I mean, from hating to run
because I hate sprinting. Yeah, I hate sprinting. You know, and it was
and that was most of what your training was sprinting.
It was a lot of suicides where you touch every line and run as fast as you can. And, I mean, I did it cause I wanted to be good, you know, be the best teammate that I could be, but it was not enjoyable.
Yeah.
I'm not a sprinter.
Well, yes. And that there's, you know, for basketball, that's really the skill you need, that and soccer. You know, there's a lot of, you know, fast work involved.
Yep.
Well, I suppose football, you know, any of the team sports where there's running involved, you've got to run fast. I mean, you got to be faster than the next guy. And
yeah. I was never super fast off the line. I mean, I'm not slow, but I'm not fast off the line. Like I try racing my nephew who's like 22 and he's got wheels. I keep telling him, I'm like, man, you got to run. He could do really well on a 5K.
Yeah, yeah. And the 5K, it's kind of funny. People say, oh, I only run a 5K. I'm like, if you run a 5K, right, I mean, it's not easy.
Yeah. My group of friends, the Buckleheads, we kind of joke like about 5Ks. Like, I have a saying that 5Ks suck because when I do a 5K, I'm going all out.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not just out there to just, you know, jog it. And so when you go as hard as you can for 3.2 miles, that's hard.
Right. Right. So when you, decide to go out for a run, how long does it take before your body really starts getting into a flow? I mean, feeling like things are all clicking.
It's gotten longer. It used to be about 3 miles. And now I would say it's like 6 to 7 miles into a run. So, I kind of have a, you know, I say the first 4 miles I just throw out because a lot of the runs, like I don't really start to feel, you know, super good, in my run until after 4 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So I say throw out the first 4 miles and then see how you feel at like, you know, 8 or 9, 10.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of us who are distance runners, that kind of becomes the norm for us. I mean, you get that longer and longer into that before you really feel like your body's warmed up. And Well, cool. So after running like, you know, around Washburn University, doing that first couple miles, when did you start pumping up the distance and doing something more than just going out and doing a little bit?
So it originally started in 2019. I was wanting to train for an Ironman.
Okay.
And so at Lake Shawnee, they have this triathlon called the 10-man, which I don't think they hold it anymore, but it was an Olympic distance triathlon. So I was training for that, did that as my first kind of bigger race. I did a half marathon, but just the discipline of swimming, like that was completely outside of my comfort zone. And then it started with the triathlon, and then I was training for an Ironman, and COVID hit.
Okay.
In 2020, I was like, well, I can still go outside and run, because I couldn't get in a pool. And that was my weakness, was swimming. So I was like, well, if I can't swim, I'm going to, you know, next on my list was to push the distance. And so I, might have been fall of 2019 that I ran the Kansas City Marathon.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then in January, I ran my first ultra, which was the Rocks on Lake Perry, the winter
Lake,
one.
Lake Perry Winter Rocks.
Lake Perry Rocks.
Yeah. Lake Perry Rocks, yeah.
Yeah, so that was my first 50K. And just after I ran that marathon, the Kansas City Marathon, I kind of just, it gave me confidence that I don't know what my limits are. Mm-hmm. And I can keep pushing. And I like the longer the distance because I'm not fast, but I like just, I don't know, I feel like I get my money's worth out of running longer and I like the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So, did you do an intentional switch to road, or just because the distance, I mean, from road to trail, did you do an intentional, switch, or was that,
my friend Josh Thompson, actually, he was the one, he had a small group of runners that would get together on the Governor Trails on Tuesdays, and he invited me out, and I ran the trails for the first time. I was like, man, that is so much harder than the road. Yeah. But I enjoyed it. Like, I mean, just being in the woods is like, that was like, okay, I'm not a road runner. There were some road races I did after that, but it was because they were local events, and I like supporting, you know, local runs, like the Topeka to Auburn half marathon and stuff like that. But my love of running is definitely on the trails.
Yeah. So for a 50K, that Lakes Prairie Rocks, that's a pretty rocky course. How did you manage that?
I did, I guess my first trail race was the half marathon out there.
Okay.
So that was the one, it would have been in October of the same year, or not same year, because the race was January of 2020.
Okay.
So in October of 19, I did a half marathon on the trails, and it went great. My friend Justin Newhouse and I, we ran through, like the start of the race was great, and then we ran through about 10 minutes into it. It was just a thunderstorm, lightning pouring down rain for almost the entire time. And the whole time I was thinking, man, there's crazy people out here running a 50K, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
that was my first, like, I saw the 50Kers and I'm like, man, they got to do another loop.
And that's an interesting course when it gets wet. I mean, I've been out there a couple of times.
There's not a lot of hills. I mean, there are some, but there's no big hills. It's really the rocks that I feel like beat up your knees for me.
But, yeah. Yeah.
the uneven ground.
So when did you get the idea that you're going to like go even farther than, I mean, a lot of people, you know, the ultra, the 50K is like, okay, I've been there, done that. What took you farther?
Not being satisfied with the 50K distance. I enjoy that distance, but I really just want to see, I'm on this like journey to test and see what my body's capable of. And it just made sense to keep pushing the distance farther and farther back. So I did, what was the first race after that? I think it was fall of 2020, which was actually the race that got me into Leadville. It was the Austin Rattler, which was a 66K, which is like 42 miles, something okay. like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was down in Texas. And that was my first like, okay, this is farther than, farther than the 50K. Mm-hmm. But I felt like I trained a little bit harder and I had more time on feet than I had ever had. So I felt like it was possible. And then I did okay in it, and felt fine after it. So
I just 66K.
Yeah. It was an odd distance.
That's an odd distance.
But it was on a place called Ravella Ranch down outside of Austin, Texas.
Okay.
And it's just flat rocks. I mean, not the course isn't flat, but like just the really long rocks, like you're running on slabs of rock that can be like 100 yards. And okay. so it's just like flat rock, like the top of it and sand, like, you know, Texas sand and thistles and stuff getting in your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it was a fun race.
Yeah. That's interesting. And it qualified you for Leadville.
Yeah. So that got me, if you finish that race and you want to put your name in the drawing, they had said that they had 5 tickets to give away as Leadville entries. So I counted 43 people at the end of this.
Okay.
And mind you, it's kind of during COVID, like mm-hmm. the start of it. So there was only 43 people. So I was like, I have a 1 in 43 chance. Mm-hmm. Odds are good.
Mm-hmm.
So I put my name in, they call five people. I wasn't drawn. And then he says, well, actually they gave me more tickets. So this little girl was pulling out the names of this, in the drawing. And so he asked her, how many more should we do? And she says 5 more. So they pull out 5 more. And, I could not believe it when my name was called. I was the 9th person out of those 10.
And that's pretty good.
I tell my friend Devin, I'm like, man, my brain was like, well, I got to find a new race to qualify for Leadville. Cause I had Leadville was my, like, that was my ambitious, like dream goal race
mm-hmm.
to get into. And when they called my name, I was like, this is awesome. I was a kid in a candy store. So it was great. It was a great experience. It was well worth the drive.
And then you went to Leadville the following year. I mean, was that for the,
no, I actually,
cause I think I your first attempt, I think was, did you not finish? If I was trying to remember what you'd mentioned,
they gave you the option to defer
okay.
a year.
Okay.
So I deferred 2021 in order to, because I really wanted my best self at Leadville.
Okay.
And so I was like, I think I need another year of doing ultras and training to better my body, give me a better shot at it. And that was the right decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was a hard decision to make because I was like, well, I could run it this year, but there were still some unknowns, whether, you know, how the race was going to be put on and if it was going to be put on. And so I just decided I'm going to push it back.
There were a lot of races that way that they were, it was really kind of up in the air, and they kind of announced at the last minute that they were going to go ahead with it.
Yeah.
Now, yep. did you run another race in the mountains, I guess, in between those? I thought it was.
Yes, you had Devin Nelson on.
I had Devin Nelson on, yeah. And yeah. I thought that you had run a race with him up in the mountains, and that kind of gave you a different perspective on running at altitude.
Yep. We did my first 100 attempt was the Silver Heels 100.
Okay.
And that was an incredible experience. It was definitely a race I will never forget. We did not finish, you know, as he said, we ended up DNFing at mile 70, 71. Part of that DNF was just, it was uncertainty of, and kind of doubting myself that I could make the cutoff. We had the sweeper with us by then, the guy sweeping the course, mm-hmm. which was humbling. And, yeah. He was just hanging out with us, like, you guys are the last two guys. So, which that was the first. But I kept asking, you know, the volunteers and stuff at the aid station, like, do we have time? And I asked that guy, the sweeper, to shoot it to me straight. And he's like, man, you got to make some good time in order to make that. I'm not saying it's impossible, but, and I had already had like self-doubt whether I had enough time. I think that I had, the capability physically, but once I had that seed of doubt, that I didn't have enough time, and Devin had already at that point made the decision to call it. I was like, yep, we're done. That's it. So we called it there.
So you were at the aid station, and you said, "Yeah, you said we're not."
Which was one of the worst aid stations to drop at. Actually, there was no cell coverage, and luckily there was a really nice lady that was volunteering that was moving to another aid station to take over sweeping duties, and she graciously gave us a ride back into town. But the last 5 miles coming into that aid station, Trout Creek, that was one of the scariest times running, because I was so sleep deprived. That was the longest I'd ever gone. And I was surprised at how sleepy I was, but I was like running, falling asleep, tripping over rocks. I fell like 5 times in 5 miles, and I was trying to slap my face to stay awake. It was a hard 5 miles.
Wow. And that was about mile 70.
That would have been 65 to 70. Yeah.
65 to 70. So what was the cutoff for the,
The race cutoff was 36 hours that year.
36 hours. Okay.
Yeah. Which is plenty of time. Okay. It really was. I think they moved it to 38 hours this year, but it was enough time to finish. But
so there's quite a bit of climbing and descending.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got more elevation gain than Leadville and like Outlaw, and being in the mountains. A lot of the course was, I mean, the majority of it's over 9,500 feet.
Okay.
And then you go up to 12,500. 12.6, something like that.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It was there was a lot of lessons learned from that. And I, you know, looking back on it, I wouldn't have changed anything because of the mindset that it's given me. It's given me perspective on how tough I need to be and just be smarter and
So what did you do different to prepare for the Leadville? I mean, just for mindset wise. I mean, training would be probably adjusted as well.
Mindset wise, well, that goes to before Leadville was the Outlaw 100 in February of this year.
Of this year, okay. So how was the weather this year? I was there a year before, and it was
I watched last year and it was not comparable. I had gorgeous weather. God was looking out, you know. It was definitely a lot better. I think the high was like, I think it got up to like 50 degrees and the low was like 34 maybe.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, doable and no rain or snow coming down.
No rain or snow. It was windy for a little bit. That was it. And I had plenty of layers. I mean, it was, I'm a winter. I'm on team winter, as you say. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I was happy. I was in my happy place.
Yeah. Yeah. That's two years ago, that was an interesting time to be there.
So. Yeah. No, man, I watched it because I heard of Jackie Beth on somehow just locally in Topeka and started following her on Strava. Mm-hmm. And I saw that she finished and I was like, man, she is so tough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That. in that conditions, I'm like, you got to be really strong mentally.
Yeah. I saw her come through. I was there to pace. I was here there to pace somebody. And he ended up turning an ankle like the first 2 miles in. And so he was really struggling, but I was still down there and yeah, it was cold and it was just very, very difficult conditions, 2 years ago.
Yeah. You don't know what you're going to get when you sign up for that.
You never know. Well, no. Normally you think Oklahoma, I mean, we're in Kansas and that happens more often here. The Oklahoma is far enough south. That's really rare for it to be that cold.
Yeah. And
And
that, I mean, that would be abnormally cold. I mean, not abnormally cold, but that'd be even really cold for Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been several winters. It's gotten, well, I think last winter down 6 below for a weekend or two. Weekend or two, if I remember right. I was out running in it. So we had 10 inches of snow. And I was like, I need snowshoes for this. but it doesn't stay that cold for very much longer than usually a week or two at the most here. But yeah, it's interesting because my son lives north and he's in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And when it gets cold, it stays cold pretty much the whole summer. I mean, the whole winter. And here we get, you know, kind of ups and downs. But so you ran Outlaw this year?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was after DNFing Silver Heels. I'm not sure I can pinpoint exactly what I changed mentally, but it was just – I knew deep down that I could have finished physically at Silver Heels. It was the sleep deprivation and lack of calories and stuff like that that ended up, and then the cutoff times, I got too far behind. And so just going into Outlaw, I kept telling myself positive self-talk that I'm capable. I can do it. And, I would stress that to any new runners coming into it, that, you know, the power of self-talk is more powerful than you think. And that if you keep telling yourself that you can do it, you know, you just got to go do it. And, it's kind of simple, too simple, but it worked for me. I went into Outlaw almost knowing that I was going to finish. And I never once had a moment where I wanted to quit or I thought about quitting. It was just, I mean, it was a grind for sure. That course is tough.
That course is very, very tough.
Yeah. that what is it? Big John's climb. You go up and it's not, you know, it's not massive, but it's pretty steep and you got to do it over and over and over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did they still call it the devil's butt crack?
Off the side of the hill.
Where you fall off the side of the hill. Yeah. Yeah.
That feels great when you're at mile like 70. Yeah. the quads were hurting.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing about that course that amazed me, because I I ran it at night, so I didn't get to see much. I mean, I could see what my headlamp showed me, because I was pacing. I was pacing somebody, and she was, you know, she'd run two loops already, and so this was her third loop. And I started 7 o'clock at night, and we ran until 6 a.m. There was a section where we were going through boulders the size of rooms and houses. I mean, they were 10 feet tall, and you know, like they were 10 by 10 by 10, and or some of them even bigger. And the trail just winds in back and forth, and it's just like, these things are huge.
very cool place for, like, you drive the drive down to there, it's like, oh, this is pretty flat. Then you come up, you can see the trees and the hills, and then you go up into the hills, and it's like, oh man, this is a beautiful location.
Yes. Yeah. It's unusual for Oklahoma, that, because I mean, I think of Oklahoma being pretty much like Kansas. I mean, you drive, it's farms and prairie and country, but not, you know, not pine trees and hills. That is a very, very cool place. I would like to go down there and hike again. I don't know that I ever want to run the Outlaw after seeing the course. I'm like, no, I'll do 100 miles someplace else. But I love the location.
I had the opposite thought. I was like, maybe the 135.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, well, it but was, it was,
I, just I understand,
of,
I understand.
Yeah, of looking at that, it, looking at it, and my skill level and you know, kind of my strengths, I'm like, this is not my strong suit. This is not something that I should think about doing. Just, I'll pace. I'd be glad to go pace somebody. But
did you get to run through the Rough Canyon, that section?
I don't remember what it was called. I mean, I
it's
got
like
to,
when you start the 13 mile loop, or no, that would be, it would be on the 7 mile loop.
The 7 mile loop. Yeah. I ran the 7 mile loop too. Yeah.
So there's a sign that says Rough Canyon, and
Rough Canyon,
to my recollection, that is the rockiest
section
of any course that I've ever ran.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a boulder field that, unless you're jumping on top of boulder to boulder to boulder, there's no way through there.
Right. Yeah. Unless you're, well, zigzagging back and forth, and you, yeah.
Yeah. It's unrunnable to me.
Yeah. 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 There was a lot of places that I looked at the course there, and I went, that's just, you can't really run. And it was a fast walk. I did feel good. The Abby was the lady I was pacing, and her goal was to do that loop in 10 hours. And we did it in 9. And so I felt like, as a pacer, I did a good job. We had, you know,
yeah, that's solid.
Yeah. And, you know, there was mostly hiking, but we set a pretty good pace and covered that really well. And she finished, you know, she finished her 100. Jackie awesome. Beth, I mean, that's when I met Jackie Beth. Jackie Beth showed up. None of us knew Abby and didn't know each other. And, I got introduced to Jackie.
It's really
Beth
fun that you can, you know, trail running, you get to meet new people.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's lifelong friends after a race.
Yeah, yeah. I called Jackie Beth to ask her to pace me for the Hawk, and my DNF. And I had another DNF at the Hawk this year, so
that's unfortunate.
Along with a bunch of others, there were only 11 people finished it this year. So
yeah, I was pacing Devin out there. It was hot. Yeah. Yeah, and that was the cool part. Like I went through the night, and I was still like, oh, this is hot.
Yeah. It didn't really cool off much at night, but
no, it just gets more humid.
Yeah. So how did you got your entry into Leadville? How did your race go? What was kind of your strategy and your plan going in there?
Oh man. So, something that was different from Silver Heels was, I took the approach to acclimate before the race.
Okay.
So my family and I went camping, at Turquoise Lake, which is, you run part of the course. So we were literally camping like 20 feet from the trail that I ran on.
Okay.
Which was really cool. And, so we went out there to kind of family vacation before the race, and, I got out there 10 days before. And
okay, so you gave yourself a pretty good amount of time then to acclimate.
Yeah, it made a huge difference. It gave me more confidence. I just felt better from day one that I showed up to the day before the race. I mean, I just felt a lot better. So it was a good call going out there early. So that was one thing that strategy-wise was different. I hired a coach, Cliff Pittman. He lives in Fayetteville, Arkansas. He's awesome. I can't remember if he said I think he just heard it somewhere, but the strategy was bank energy, not time.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have to make the cutoffs. That's what makes Leadville like super hard. Because there are a lot more hundreds out in Colorado that are tougher courses than Leadville. But the course time and making the cutoffs make Leadville really tough.
And overall, it's a 30-hour
lander.
Yeah. Overall, it's a 30-hour cutoff, if I remember right, in Leadville. Is that right?
Yep. It's 30-hour. So I finished Outlaw in 34 hours and some change.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly. So I was like, man, can I run under 30 hours? And I talked to Jeremy Harris, the race director of the Outlaw Race Series, and he had ran Leadville. And he's like, Jonathan, you can do it, because Leadville is more runnable. It's the Hope Pass climb that will get everybody. Because it had a little bit less elevation gain than Outlaw.
Mm-hmm.
The strategy was bank energy, not time. And so I tried to stay as conservative as possible throughout, until I got to probably mile 74.
Okay.
Was the first time that I actually now I'm going to push it, I'm going to push the gas a little bit. And that's just meaning like hiking a lot faster and running the downhills. So a funny thing that happened at Leadville, the start of the race, I'm standing in line with, all these amazing people. There's like 600, 700 runners. It was awesome. So 4 minutes before the shotgun blast that starts the race, I am taking a picture, and I realize as I put my phone back in, that I forgot to pack my nutrition for the first 12 and a half miles. And I'm not freaking out, but I'm like, oh crap, this isn't good. And so I call my wife, she puts my coach on, and he sprints to his car, him and Jake Bradley, another guy out there crewing for me, who's awesome. They sprint to the car and grab their nutrition that they had, because they've been hiking out there and stuff. And he shoves it in my hand and says, this is what you got for the first 12 miles, go. And so there's actually, somebody took a one of my favorite photos of Leadville, or of the race. I'm running down 6th Street. Everybody is ahead of me. I'm like 2.5 minutes behind everybody. And there's a picture of me in the back with everybody in front of me. So I'm the last person besides the Legacy Foundation runner.
Okay.
I'm the last person out of the chute.
Because you were trying to put your food in your pack.
Right. Well, I didn't have the food, so I had to get that first.
And yeah.
Then run up there.
Oh, so you didn't get the food until after the start?
No, it had started.
Oh, okay.
The race had started. And so I waited, it was 2.5 minutes before I crossed the mat, the timing mat of the start. But everybody was ahead of me. And I don't know that I would change it. I think for the better, I got that cool fit, that cool picture.
Yeah.
Just the experience, there were people saying runner coming through. And I kind of got like a solo applause by like all these spectators, which was just like, how do you not use that as a booster?
Yeah. And
so my first mile was a little fast.
Were you trying to catch up with everybody then?
I was, but not like, I was trying to still do it conservatively, and apparently conservatively in the first mile was a 9:30 mile.
Oh my goodness.
But you know, I think that's because I was running on adrenaline and just the hype of what had just happened. But it was really cool.
Yeah.
Well, it was a good start.
Yeah. I would imagine. Well, and even, you know, even if you're in the pack, you know, in the group of people, yeah. It's hard at you know, that first mile. It's hard to, I mean, you said, you know, banking your energy. It's hard not to go and try to keep up with everybody. I mean, that's you know, a lot of runners, you know, I had somebody tell me you can't win in the first mile, but you can lose it in the first mile.
I backed off considerably after that. And I just, you know, then it was, you know, the race strategy of bank energy, not time after that. And, yeah, it was. So we started the race and we're off running down. You know, you start with a pretty decent, it's like a 3 mile gradual downhill, which is really nice.
That's a nice way to get your body kind of flowing a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I mean, all the way to the first 12 and a half there's only one little like 200 foot climb that gets you up to the dam. And then you run around Turquoise Lake. And so there's not really any climbing besides that. And it's all pretty runnable.
So on the way back, you have to go up that then?
You have to go down it.
No, I mean, but you said the last three miles is down
begin.
Yeah, the last 3 miles is up to get back to the finish line.
Yep. Yep. You got to worry about that stuff later.
Yeah. You don't think about that. Don't think of that when you're going out. Yeah.
Oh, no. But, I was purely focused on the course forward ahead of me, you know, aid station to aid station. One of my mental things that I kept saying to myself was think small-minded, meaning like small goals ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
So get this aid station or this climb and then this downhill, like don't overthink it. Don't think too far ahead. There's a Navy SEAL, Chad Wright, who's a awesome guy.
He's amazing. I love listening to him.
He's one of my favorite motivational. Like I was watching YouTube videos the night before and the morning of Chad Wright. Like he motivates me. He's a very positive dude, Christian dude. And so his Navy SEAL mindset is, you know, people that quit Navy SEAL training, a lot of them, they think too far ahead. They see it as a insurmountable task ahead of them. And you got to keep it locked in right where you're at. And I kind of stole that from them and used that as my own personal mindset throughout the race.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And it's kind of interesting because people who don't run ultras or even people who, you know, if they're not runners, they can't comprehend it. And even, you know, marathon runners, you know, thinking of running four times the distance of their normal marathon, you know, a lot of them will say, how do you handle that? And it's like, you just run to the next aid station. I mean, that, yeah. You know, it's only
food there.
Know, yeah. There's food there.
Run to the food.
Yeah, usually it's anywhere 5 to 6 miles. And I said, you know, I never calculated how much time was, you know, how much time I had run. In fact, my pacer told me, you know, don't even look at your watch. You know, once I picked him up at 50 miles, because that was kind of my strategy, make 50 miles at, you know, basically under 15 hours was, you know, because I was going for the cutoff and make 50 miles at under 15 hours. And, you know, once I picked up my pacer, he's like, don't even look at your watch. He says, I'll take care of that. And so, you know, it was just focus on, you know, dial in. And that was my strategy for the 100. But
I mean, you got to keep it, you got to focus, you know, if you think too far ahead, it's just going to derail you of where you're at, right?
It's overwhelming. Right, your mind can't, and it's like what, you know, Chad Wright says. I mean, if you're thinking too far ahead, your mind makes it bigger than what it is. I mean, it's like you can't overcome it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you said, how was Hope Pass? I mean, you said, yeah, that's always the big challenge. I mean, you had to go up it and down, then up it and down again.
Yeah. The race goes pretty smoothly all the way to Twin Lakes. And then you got out of Twin Lakes, you go, you start the Hope Pass climb, and it's a 2 mile, meadow. You go through a river, and then you see the sign, at the bottom of the Hope Pass climb that says 4 miles. And I knew at that point, I'm like, okay, that's 4 miles of straight uphill, and it's a mountain. Like, it was steep. Mm-hmm. So it was 4 miles, you know, straight up that Hope climb. And, it was tough. You know, there were some miles I slowed down a lot, but still, I had, Jake Bradley, one of my crew members, he's a Ledman finisher. He's a Cliff Pittman's friend. And he brought him out there. So glad that I got to meet him, that he was part of my crew. But so he had already ran the course, and he said before I left Twin Lakes, I didn't forget it. I was like, he just said, keep, as long as you keep moving, you'll make the cutoff. And so he's like, it doesn't matter how fast you move, just keep moving. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't worry about the cutoff. I just kept moving, kept hiking up this, and it was a tough climb. That Hope Pass climb it was the first time that I was like really, really tested in the race. That was, you know, but I got up to, the Hope aid station. That's like a half mile from the top of Hope Pass, and, you know, see the llamas up there. Like, if you've seen all the Leadville videos, they got
haul their stuff up there with llamas, don't they?
Yeah. And they had hot ramen, which was awesome. It was kind of chilly up there. That was the only part it was supposed to rain, and we're supposed to get, you know, a significant amount of rain, you know, or it looked that way. And the weather cleared out, and that was the only part it sprinkled for 15 minutes. So that, I mean, as far as weather goes, that was the only time that there was any precipitation on the course for me.
Wow.
Which was awesome.
Yeah. Cause oftentimes in Colorado, you never know what you're going to get. I mean, rain can pop up in just, you know, the matter of half an hour, you can be clear skies and then turn to a thunderstorm and, you know, you get drenched and then it moves on.
Yeah. One of the training runs I was doing when we were camping the week before, I had my wife drop me off like just outside that downhill, just outside of Leadville, and I ran back to the campsite, and I stupidly did not take my rain jacket. And about 30 minutes into the run, it just poured on me. It was a thunderstorm. I was really worried about the lightning, like not necessarily the rain, but it poured on me. There was lightning, and made it back to my campsite. So yeah, I mean, you know, Colorado, you better be prepared. So I make my way up to the top of Hope, and then I have a really, really steep descent down into Winfield, and Winfield's the 50-mile turnaround. Uh-huh. At that point, after mile 40 is when I remember my right knee, like, just really hurting, and it was the same pain I had at the end of Outlaw. And I was like, man, it's already hurting, and this is mile 40. And I still don't know how. I just said, you know, shut up, knee, you're fine. And I just kept pushing, and the pain never got worse. You know, it was a constant pain, but it never got worse.
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, this is manageable. And so it would really hurt on the downhills. And so I kind of went slower than I wanted to down into Winfield, but that may have helped me. It may have saved some of my quad strength, for the return journey. But yeah, so Winfield was not a fun aid station for me.
Yeah, and I had forgotten that Leadville had, you know, that Hope Pass was at the end, and so you have to do basically up and down Hope Pass twice in, you know, at the middle part of the race.
Yep. Okay. Yep. And it's steeper on the backside.
I thought the Hope Pass
climb was bad, and then so I'm down in Winfield, and I got to share this story. I'm sitting there. My feet was still wet. They were wet the entire climb and all the way down into Winfield. I could have either changed my socks right after the river, but I decided I'm just going to do it at Winfield. So I take my socks and shoes off. My feet are all pruney, and I'm like, okay, this isn't good, but I don't have time. I got to go. And I'm sitting there, and I put some lube on my feet, and then I put my socks back on. And there's a volunteer that's shouting, or, you know, telling everybody that the shuttle will be there in 10 minutes to pick them up, to take them to Twin Lakes. So the people that have dropped out.
Oh, uh-huh.
And
so people dropped out at the 50, they've just been at 50 miles and they said,
yeah, they were just physically or mentally done. Like they still had. So I came into Winfield, I think it was like 40 or 45 minutes before the dead cutoff, okay, where they're not going to let you out of there. And so I was like, I still have time. I can, you know, I made it there before the cutoff, but I still have time to leave before the cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people sitting there, and this volunteer says the shuttle, and then she points to me and says, are you here for the shuttle? And without skipping a beat, like, this is just, you know, it kind of fired me up. I was like, I just said, hell no, I'm not getting on that shuttle. I'm going back to the finish. And one of the other volunteers heard me. He's like, yeah. And it was, and I didn't think, like, I didn't want to, I thought about it after, and I was like, well, that might've been kind of offensive to some of the people that have already made the decision or physically not able to do it. And I didn't think about that at the moment, but I was just like, no, hell no, I'm not. I'm getting out of here. And so that was my fuel for the climb.
Yeah, that's good. Well, the people who have, you know, made that decision, you know, they're going to process that decision for quite a while anyway. You know, one person yelling hell no is not going to make
that's true.
That much difference to. Because really, you should be anyway. If you make that decision, that's a tough call. I mean, it's a tough call to call.
Oh, for sure. I've made it before. It's a tough call.
Yeah. Well, trust, I made it
after on that climb. I had plenty of time to think about that. I was like, I don't know if I should say that that way, but.
But it did. So the climb is steeper. You said on the backside. So,
yeah.
So you went even slower.
It's really rocky. Not super runnable for the first 2 miles. And then you have, I think it's 3 miles when you start the steep climb up to Hope. And that, man, if that was the toughest time running or being out on a race that I've ever had. And it wasn't necessarily mental. It was the physical challenge, like after running, because I got into Winfield 50 miles in 13 hours and 15 minutes.
Okay, that's a pretty good time.
And so I had ran like pretty fast for me, even in a 50 miler. Mm-hmm. And then I have all that miles in my legs, and then I got this 3 mile climb. And when you see it on paper, it doesn't seem like it's undoable. I mean, it's not, but when you're in the moment, that climb is just, it's a tower. I mean, it's just, it's looking down on you like, ha ha ha, and just laughing at you. You got to climb me again. But I latched on to four other guys, and we kind of all were keeping the same pace until we got to that climb. And then it was like anybody's, you know, we kept playing leapfrog, because you go up, you know, 200 yards, and then you might have to stop and sit for a second or just take a breath. And I mean, it was definitely pretty steep. It reminded me of last year when Devin and I did the Pikes Peak. Okay. And at the very end, when you're getting into the really steep and you got the switchbacks and stuff going up to Pikes Peak. But it was that for 3 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unforgettable. That's for sure. And so I make the climb, and at some point I had to stop looking up and seeing the line of people on the switchbacks, because they look like tiny little ants up on the top of the hill. And I'm like, oh, I still got so far to go. And so I was like thinking back, you got to think small-minded, Jonathan. So yeah. I just looked at my feet and kept marching. And before I knew it, I saw the top, and I was like, I mean, it was straight up tears of joy. Man, I like the Billy Yang video, The Why. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that one?
I've seen that. Yeah.
So he says he weeped tears of joy at the top of that. And oh, I never could, relate to that until I did that. And it was spot on. Like, his video was just spot on. You just stand there for a second at the top and it's like, oh man. But so that climb was one of the, it was the only time in the race, when I left Winfield, I knew that I still had enough time, or I thought I did.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I can still make the cutoff. It was a hard cutoff at Twin Lakes now at 10 p.m. And so that was the only time in the course where I was like, I don't know if I can make that cutoff, because it was just too hard for me at that. I was tired, and it was too hard for me to judge like my pace going up mm-hmm. that climb.
Mm-hmm.
So until I got to the top and I saw that I had 2 hours to get back to Twin Lakes, I'm like, it's 6 miles of downhill in 2 hours. And I was like, I got this, I can do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was the turning point for me in the race of, just whether I thought it was possible.
Yeah. And I could see that, you wouldn't be able to calculate that climb, because there's much unknowns. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when were you able to pick up a pacer?
Back in Twin Lakes.
In Twin Lakes. Okay. So you at 62. Mile 60, you get to 62. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And I told my good friend, Justin, I mean, he's a brother. I told him, I was like, I'm going to get to you. Like, I promised him, I was like, I'm going to get to you, because he was supposed to pace me at Silver Heels at mile 60, and I never got to him.
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, not 60, at mile 80 of Silver Heels. He was going to pace me in the last 20.
Mm-hmm.
And I never got to him, and it just killed me that I was like, that's not going to happen again. I'm going to get to Justin. Shout out Justin Newhouse. He's awesome. Yeah. So, and that was a, I was typing out just my thoughts on the race and stuff. And that was probably the most emotional that I've been in any race. Just knowing that I could make the cutoff. I was coming into Twin Lakes, 45 minutes. I think it was 45 minutes before the cutoff.
Okay.
Just making the cutoff there, because then after that you have time. They give you more time on the back half after Twin Lakes.
Okay.
So I gained basically an hour. I think I gained an hour on top of that on cutoff times, because they know your pace is most likely going to drop off in mm-hmm. that back half, is why I think they do it. But so I came into Twin Lakes, saw my crew waiting for me. They were like, Johnny. And that aid station is just electric on another level of I mean, everybody, it's in the middle of the night and everybody's just cheering like so loud. And there's thousands and thousands of people, tents like lined up next, like, I mean, you know,
yeah,
as close as they can be for, you know, a mile. And it was just absolutely an awesome, awesome experience running in there and seeing my crew. And they ran through the my tent that they had set up was at the end of it. So they ran from where I came in all the way to the end. And then you cross the mat right at the end of it. But it was just absolutely, absolutely awesome.
Yeah. And that those people, I mean, when you're coming in there and making the cutoff, you know, everyone would be excited because you're, I mean, there's a, would be a whole different feel than you would be at mile 50, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. It was, an unforgettable experience.
And you had a pretty strong end. I mean, from 60 miles on, I mean, from what I've heard from your pacers that you had a pretty strong finish after that 60.
Yeah, I surprised myself. it's fun when you can do that. It was the strategy at the beginning, bank energy and not time. As long as I made the cutoffs and I banked energy, I was able to, you know, start using that energy for the second half of this. And it was, there was a climb right out of Twin Lakes that's like 1700 feet. And after doing the backside of Hope, I was like, oh, this is nothing. This is absolutely, like, some people, like, it's a climb. I'm not discrediting it, but some people are like, oh, that climb will get you. I'm like, heck no. After doing that backside, it's like, I just compare it, you mm-hmm. know, and I'm like, this is doable. 100%. And I got my pacer now. I got my boy, Justin.
Yeah. And what did you notice, having a pacer is an advantage. I mean, what was your, kind of, what was the help that pacers gave you?
Making sure that I was, I said it was really important that I stay on calories and drinking. Leadville is one of the few races that they still allow muling. It's like a grandfathered in rule.
Hmm.
So my pacers, all I had was my, I had my vest on, but all I had was one soft flask on my chest.
Okay.
And then they would trade it out after I was done with that. And they would hand me calories. So they were making me as light as possible. And maybe, you know, thinking about it, maybe that's why I was able to run faster. Yeah. I was lighter.
You had a significant amount of weight that you weren't carrying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, Justin did awesome. I think that was his first time pacing. And he was just absolutely spot on, phenomenal. He kept me on pace. He's like, Johnny, you got to move a little bit faster here. And, but he also, when we made that climb out of Twin Lakes, that was my only that was my only low moment to my recollection, as far as I hit a calorie deficit and I got lightheaded.
Okay.
And this happened to me in Silver Heels too. So I was, you know, I was prepared. I knew the feeling, so I was like, I just got to sit down and eat something. I'll be fine. So I sat down for 10 minutes and was able to eat something. Felt fine after that. That was a really smart decision to just take those 10 minutes there. We were good on time and I needed calories. Mm-hmm. And ever after that point, I was able to stay on top of it. You know, Justin kept saying, you know, eat this. What do you want? And one of my go-tos that I think it's the second time I've ever used it running was beef jerky. It was my solid food that gave me something in my gut. And then I used starch packets.
Packets? I've not heard of those.
they call it a super starch. And it's supposed to just be a gradual, slow-burning fuel source that doesn't spike. Okay. So if you're in a low, you need some sugar. You need to get yourself back. But just to maintain myself, I really love the UCAN. They're, I've never had a problem with being able to take them, even when I don't want to eat anything.
Wow.
It's so liquidy. I mean, it's even more liquidy than like applesauce.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's my go-to late in a race when I can't eat anything.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. So are they like a gel pack? I mean, similar size?
Yeah. Yep. As far as I know, I think they're gaining, you know, more traction with being a popular option. I know a lot of people on are doing keto, like them, but they don't have a whole lot of sugar, but they got a lot of they have the calories and they have the carbs.
They have the calories and carbs, so yeah, and if especially if they will give you a timed release, because I mean, a lot of times I know aid station food has tendency to be quick calories.
Yeah, and, exactly. And so that's kind of my slow burning throughout the second half of a race.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
It worked great. I never once felt like throwing up. Nutrition was great. I used, I switched actually 3 weeks before the race. I did a training camp in Arkansas, in my coach's backyard. And, he suggested that if I can make the switch to scratch hydration.
Okay.
It had less sugar and more salt. And I'm a salty sweater.
Okay.
So it was lighter on my stomach, easier to get down, and had more salt. And I'm a salty sweater. So it made sense. It was great. It worked great through. I usually don't mix hydration in my bladder.
Okay.
But I put it in everything. I didn't have straight water, except for the climb up to Hope.
Okay.
And that was by mistake. So
what were you doing before? Were you doing something like Tailwind?
Yeah, I used Tailwind. And then I tried like a BPN. What do they call that? Oh, I can't remember it. It's their hydration, and those work good, but they were higher in sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, you're eating all these sweet things, and so the less sugary your hydration is, was the better for me.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people who use Tailwind who talk about getting just sick of the taste after, you know, certain time.
Yeah, yep. And I don't use it a lot in the winter. Tailwind was my go-to before that.
Okay.
I'm a scratch fan now. It worked great.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. So Justin gets me to Outward Bound, which is like, what is that, 74, 76 miles? I think it's 76. 76 miles in. Mm-hmm. And then I pick up Devin Nelson.
Oh, okay. So Devin was with you for the last. Yeah. Okay.
Devin was my second pacer. And, you know, him just having his experience with 100 milers and running through the night. And, you know, we do a lot of training runs together. And he brings some good tunes. And we just, you know, it's just a good time hammering the hikes together. And yeah, I made the right decision on my pacers.
Yeah.
Those guys, they get a gold medal for their job out there.
Well, that's cool. Did you have any trouble? You said you had sleep deprivation at Silver Heels. Had you adapted to it by now? I mean,
I was doing fine. So I drank coffee in the morning when I first woke up, and I didn't have any caffeine throughout the race. I was trying to save it till the end. And so I didn't have any caffeine until I got to Outward Bound, which is like 2 a.m. So that was the first time I told Justin, I was like, I'm getting a little sleepy. Like I'm okay, but I'm getting a little sleepy. And he's like, well, you're going to get some coffee at Outward Bound. So I had a small cup of coffee, and then they started putting, the caffeinated scratch in my soft last. So it was just a low, a little bit of caffeine throughout the rest of the race. But man, it was like jet fuel. I had been or not having caffeine through the whole time. And then when it hits me, it normally doesn't. Like in my day-to-day life, like coffee just is a morning routine. I love coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But feeling that was like, I felt the spike of the caffeine. But so we power up the power line climb, which is the last big climb, Devin and I. And he's like, man, you are hiking fast. And I was like, I feel good. I'd banked the energy and I, you know, it was time to let loose. And from there on, it was, I was surprised at how many people I was passing, not out of a prideful saying that, but it was just a lot of people were hurting and I had banked the energy and I was, you know, it was my time to start the wheels moving. So we got to the top of the power line climb and then we ran a lot of the way down into May Queen, which was the last aid station before the finish. And we got into May Queen and he had texted my crew that we were a mile out and they weren't prepared. we beat the estimated time so much that they weren't prepared. They did fine. They got me in and out of there, but they later said that I came in so much faster than they had projected that they were like, that can't be right. I actually, my wife was on her way there to see me at that last aid station and, she didn't get there soon enough. So I was kind of bummed that I didn't get to see her cause I was looking for her and, they were like, yeah, you beat Mandy, you beat your wife. they were like, don't, you're not sitting down. They changed stuff out so fast and, they said, get out of here. You're good.
And so did you feel okay? You know, not sitting down, you didn't need.
Oh, I feel great.
Okay.
I was surprised at that point. I was really surprised at how good I was feeling. And to the point where I was still like the two miles out of the May Queen aid station, I kind of still held in reserve. We were still hiking some, running some. And then because the trail is kind of really single file there, it's single track. And it after that, I knew it opened up. And after 2 miles out of there, I look over at Devin. I'm like, you ready to run? And that was the time it was like, That was the most runner's high I've ever felt in my running so far. I mean, it just hit me like the, you know, I can see the finish line,
mm-hmm.
In my mind. I'm like, I'm so close. Like I'm 10 miles out and yeah, those last 10 miles. I mean, we ran a lot of 11 minute miles.
After the last 10, you ran 11
yeah,
miles.
Yeah, we're in the last 90 miles in, and I was running 11-minute miles at the end of Leadville. And I was just like, this is crazy. I feel good. And I remember Devin had his jacket on. He was like, I got to stop and take my jacket off. And I remember looking over and I'm saying, if you're thinking I'm going to blow up, I'm not going to blow up. I feel great. And we rode that high end. It was that was an absolute awesome shared experience. Like I'm sure he would say that, you know, that just being able to finish so much stronger than I did at Outlaw. Cause Outlaw, I walked the last 13 miles.
Okay.
So it was a totally different finish experience. And man, like, I mean, even those, so those back to those last, the first 3 miles, which are the last 3 miles. Mm-hmm. So you got that gradual uphill and, we were, we walked maybe 3/4 of that, or 3/4 of a mile in that last 3 miles. So we ran over 2 miles of that last. And then once we got, definitely it was the last mile and a half, which is still has a little bit of a climb and stuff. And I was just on another level of high, feeling great. And, we ran that in, we ran it all the way to the finish. And, just seeing my crew, it was, I definitely was tearing up. And, I got to finish it on my son's birthday.
Oh, that's cool.
So my oldest son, Jonah, turned 9, and being able to finish the race, just a dream come true. It was emotional.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then my little Avery, he's going to be 4 soon.
Okay.
But he just took off. He's like, oh, we're running? Let's run. and he was just booking it. I was like, man, I'm running as fast as I possibly can right now. And this kid's just like blowing me out of the water.
So did your son who's 9, did he get some sort of idea of kind of the kind of effort and determination it took to do
that? Oh yeah. He's seen it enough. He's, he was an outlaw in Silver Heels, and so he saw me not finish, and then saw me finish at Outlaw and then Leadville, and I'm pretty sure he knows. Yeah, he definitely was getting a little, not teary eyed, but you could see it in his eyes that he was proud of his dad for not quitting.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and that's a good thing for your kids to see. That's yep. Because
yeah, it was a man. It was about as perfect as a race that I could have imagined, which is crazy because it's such a big it's such a big race, and it's my A race. It's a dream race.
That's a great one to have a perfect race.
and it's like I'm still in awe of it. I'm like, how did it go that well for me? And I just, God was looking out. He was watching over. I had a lot of people praying for me. He is my strength. Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying that, and he kept, when I needed it, he was there. And, it was an absolute great experience.
That's
cool. I'll never forget it.
Yeah. So do you have anything on your list ahead? If like, okay, I'm going to keep going.
Actually, I'm running the Hell Creek 100 in 5 weeks.
Okay.
So October 1st, I had already had that on the plan. If I was going to drop out of it, if recovery didn't go well, but it looks like recovery is going to be fine. I'm doing pretty good. Just slowly working back up, and then we'll see what happens in 5 weeks. And then next year I really, so I'm not fast, but I really love anything over 50 miles. But I want to push and see how far I can go. So, I am working with my coach about possibly doing a 200 next year.
Okay.
To see what, because they give you so much time in the cutoffs that there's a lot of hiking.
Mm-hmm.
And that appeals to me. Like
the longer the distance. Yeah.
Yeah. The longer the distance and the more time you get out there, more you get experience. And I mean, it's not going to make it easy, but
no.
But I'm not fast, so like doing Boston's completely out. Yeah. We can just rule that one out.
Yeah, and probably Western States won't be in the cards either. Yeah.
No. But yeah. I'm going to put my name in since I ran Leadville. So
oh, that's right. You get a qualifying race. So
I got to enter. I
mean, yeah, you got to enter. And if you get drawn, you got to run. I mean, you at least. I mean,
absolutely.
You'd have to go out and give it a whirl. Yeah.
One of probably the biggest 100 that I want to attempt someday, and it's ambitious for me, really ambitious. But is the Uray 100?
Okay, I have heard that.
It is gnarly. I mean, that it's got 42,000 feet of climbing.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, they give you a lot of time, a lot more time, but it's a lot of up and down, up, big mountains.
Yeah. Yeah. The mountains around Uray are, you know, they're pretty significant.
Yeah. So that's my ambitious one. One that I'm actually really considering doing next year is the Bighorn. Devin really wants to go do the Bighorn, and I'm like, I've always wanted to do a race in Wyoming. So mm-hmm. whether I do the 50 or the 100, that's on my list too.
Yeah. This year was not the year to do it. I had some folks to run with who went out there, and it was
muddy this year?
Hot.
Hot? Oh.
Yeah, it was unseasonably hot, and these were experienced runners, and I think the heat got them. They had a DNF.
Oh, jeez.
So yeah, that's part of the thing with running trail races. You never know what you're going to get.
Oh no, absolutely.
And it sounds like you had everything perfect come together for you, and celebrate that time. I mean, when it all comes together and works.
Oh, I'm still celebrating it.
I'll take that any day. Right.
Yeah, I tell anybody that some people ask me, like, how do you do that? And I'm like, well, if you really want to do it, if you want to do it bad enough, they make these races to where, you know, anybody can finish them if they want to finish them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you really want to do it and you put the training in, it's possible. You know, somebody that, you know, signs up for a race and they're like, well, I did it on a whim. I really don't want to do it. That sounds like they might fail,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I think that, any new runners, like if they really want to do it, just train for it. What's the worst that can happen? You know?
Yeah. Your DNF.
You fail at something.
You fail. That you go do it again.
Failure's not a bad thing.
No, you know, it's not.
I learned my lesson. Like Silver Heels taught me so much that, you know, failure is it can be a great motivator.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, you know, in truth, we learn more from our failures than we do from our successes. I mean, it's more difficult to get usable, lessons from a success than it is to get usable lessons from a failure.
Yeah.
Because when you have success, you did it, and it's hard to kind of go, well, how could I have done it better? What could I have done differently?
Yeah. it's hard to question yourself sometimes.
Yeah. But
sometimes we need to.
Sometimes we need to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thanks for taking time to be here. Appreciate it. Where can if people wanted to look you up and kind of follow you, where can they reach you?
I'm really only on Facebook.
Only on Facebook.
Not on Instagram or anything. But I just want to give a quick shout out to my coach Cliff and just helping me get through this, and then definitely my crew. They were awesome. My wife supported me so much that she deserves so much. So, and the Buckleheads who do a lot of the training miles with me here in Topeka.
Yeah,
that's just an awesome group of runners.
Sounds like a great group.
Love those guys.
Runners, yeah.
Yeah. So I appreciate it, Eric.
Yeah, great. Well, before I let you go, I've got the bridge questions that I need to ask you.
Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, Bridge Keeper. I'm not afraid.
The first question is going to be a two-part question. They're related. So what did you wish you had with you at Leadville, and what was it that you found that you took that you didn't need?
Probably an actual headlamp out of Winfield. So okay. I had put a tiny little backup light, and I was meant to grab my headlamp out of Twin Lakes, but I put that in there luckily in my drop bag at Winfield. So it got the job done, but having my real headlamp would have been nice.
Okay. So what did you have that you didn't need?
What did I have that I didn't need?
Or was there anything that you didn't need?
I don't know. Maybe just too many calories on me.
Okay.
I kind of got scared that I didn't have enough, so I kind of took too much, and it just kept adding up.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe just too much nutrition. Okay. But it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Not necessarily a bad thing, because you'd rather have that too much than too little.
But in order to make me lighter, I guess that would be the only thing. I mean, other than that, I had a really small first aid and water.
Okay. Well, cool.
Yeah.
So the second question is, what's the weirdest thing that you've seen when you've been out on the trail?
So I came across these high schoolers that were sitting on a rock, and I'm pretty sure they were getting high. Mm-hmm. And they looked at me like I was out of place. And I was like, wait a second, why are you giving me that look? Like, you guys are sitting on a rock out in the trails, like, doing whatever you're doing. And they gave me a look like I was a weirdo. So that's probably the craziest thing.
Okay. Third question. What's word or phrase sums up your life philosophy?
The newest one that I heard a couple months ago that I fully adopted now is kind of my new one that is my go-to. It's, comfort is a slow death. And, you know, the things that have changed my life, for whether it's for good or, you know, for negative, they are things that are uncomfortable, and things that are uncomfortable are the things that we grow from. So I don't want to always, you know, creature comforts aren't a bad thing, but I don't want to live a super, I'd never want to live a life where I'm not stepping outside of my comfort zone.
That's cool. I love that.
Yeah. That's a new one that fires me up.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Well, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others are at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there. More information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link, Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. I have my online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do not know somebody who might like it, take it just a minute. Send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next time.